You can only move forward when you embrace your truth and embrace what's in your heart, because then you're free to move forward. If not, you're paralyzed by self-doubts, the wonder ifs, the expectations of what others are thinking. But you need to own your truth. When you own your truth, that's the light that will illumine the path to where you need to go forward.
Hello, and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hello, and welcome to Building Better Leaders podcast. This is episode number 47, and today we're joined by Brian Bashan. Or is it Brian Bashan? Well, you can find out if you log on to Brian's LinkedIn, because I didn't know this, Brian, but you've got a little speaker next door to your name, and you can press on that, and there's a recording of Brian telling you how you actually pronounce his name. So for all you people on LinkedIn who haven't got that and have got a name that could be pronounced in different ways, that's a really, really good piece of kit. So Brian is founder of Evolution Evolution, based in Toronto, Canada, a coach just like us, but probably with lots and lots of different skills and lots of different approaches. So we're really welcoming you onto the podcast today, Brian. Great to have you on.
Well, thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here. And Rachel, it's a pleasure to join you today. And I have to say, you did a great job with the pronunciation of the name, with kind of mainstream pronunciation and also the nice French pronunciation. So you get an A for that.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I don't know whether this is a mantra or not, Brian, but on your LinkedIn, you also have, when you stand in your truth, embrace what is in your heart, then you are free to evolve. Explain.
Yeah, so that is something that actually came through an interview that I did. It was on the CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting Company, on Sirius XM Radio. And that was something that I said at the end about, when do you know it's time to evolve? And I really believe that, you know, you can only move forward when you embrace your truth and embrace what's in your heart, because then you're free to move forward. If not, you're paralyzed by self-doubt, the wonder ifs, the expectations of what others are thinking. But you need to own your truth. And when you own your truth, that's the light that will illumine the path to where you need to go forward.
And is that based on your own personal experience?
Absolutely. Good leading question. Yeah, absolutely. My life has been one evolution. And, you know, when I finally embraced my truth and was able to take that at heart, then I was able to move forward in an entirely new way. And that doesn't mean that I wasn't happy and joyful and fulfilled beforehand. I certainly was. But to go even deeper, because it's that longing, there's something else that's still not there, that inner feeling that I'm sure many who are listening can relate to, like, there's just something else. And that's what enabled me to be able to move forward.
So what have you always been a coach, Brian, or have you had different roles in your life up until now?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I've always been someone who's been nurturing and present to others. But, you know, just to kind of give a recap for those who are listening, I actually started out after university. I went to seminary to study to become a Catholic priest, which I did become a Catholic priest for 8 years. And I was 4 years in a parish, thriving, lots of families. I did weddings like nonstop. I felt like I was in Vegas, you know, at a chapel, you know. I did baptisms. I was at the hospital. I loved it, you know. So it was a frontline general practitioner. And then I received a phone call one evening asking to come in for a meeting the next day. And I found out that the new cardinal from the Vatican had selected me to be his new private secretary. That would translate into being chief of staff. And so at a very young age, it was talk about a shift. You know, I was all of a sudden living with him. When he went to the Vatican, I was with him. I was master of ceremonies. I was working at a very high level and supporting his role of healing and what he had to do. And, you know, I think I've always been attentive to my formation, who I am. That really was a major foundation of listening, of being present in people in joyful moments, in moments of transition. And that really enabled me, for when I freely decided to leave the priesthood, to take those skills as an executive, especially in New York City. And that really served me well. So from the pulpit to the boardroom, some of those same skills were quite powerful.
That's fascinating. So was there something in your truth that you needed to embrace then in order to leave the church?
Sure. You know, people often will ask me like, oh, when you decided to leave, you made such impact on people's lives. You know, I was a joyful, happy priest. I wasn't unhappy. You know, I really loved the people I got to serve. I loved the work I got to do, even with the cardinal on that level. But there were two things inside that started to happen. One, I knew I was being groomed for more leadership. And I knew that is not where I wanted to spend my life. Like, I just knew that was something that I thought that's what I wanted. But when I was finally being groomed for that, I was like, this is not the world I want to be in. And second, I also wanted to embrace the truth in my own heart as well, to be free to love another person, to embrace that I was a gay man and didn't want to live in two worlds, and wanted to be truly authentic in my truth. And I knew in the depth of my heart that I could bring my gifts and align that beautifully to make an impact to the world.
You know, Brian, welcome to the podcast. And then also, I just want to do a little shout out to Simon Town, who actually recommended you on the podcast. So thank you to Simon for introducing us. You know, when you were talking then, though, I do think there's a lot of, I hadn't thought about this before, but I do think there's a lot of parallels in being a priest and being a coach. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder what your view is on religion doesn't play as an important part in our lives today. And maybe coaching is that kind of substitute, because I think, you know, previously, like 10, 20, 30 years ago, you would go to the church and you would speak to the priest when you had a problem. And what you were doing was probably coaching. It's listening, reframing. You can't help because you can't step into their life, but you can provide a safe space where people can listen. And perhaps that's why coaching was a natural transition for you. Talk us through how you made that transition.
Yeah, great question. So when I was in the seminary, you know, people are always intrigued to know what was it like to go through the formation seminary. So, you know, it was a rigorous academic formation, but there's some practical things. And I remember my fourth year out of the fifth year, you take a course called pastoral counseling. So you're really learning how to counsel, coach individuals that will come to you. You're obviously not a therapist, so you have to learn when to do referrals, what are the guidelines, et cetera. And I remember that our final exam was we had to pick another seminarian in the seminary who was like maybe the first 2 years, and they had to pretend they were a parishioner making an appointment with you to come in with the problem. And you had to be videoed to see how you would kind of engage in that, you know, whole situation, make a referral. And I remember that I loved that class. Like, I just thrived at it. And the professor kept my video for the years after I left to show how to actually kind of handle the situation well and some things. So it was always something that was very natural. And I think, you know, one of the gifts I know that, you know, obviously you'd hope all clergy would have, but I certainly know it was very natural for me, was listening. Mm. And really listening to not only what was being said, but to what was being unspoken. And it was just a natural ability to enter into people's lives and to be there. So it really did transition. And it was also when I left the priesthood in business, I was always that person that people came to in the office, you know, if they were having an issue or there was a concern, And so it was always something that was just very natural. And now I love using that and uniting that with the clients I work with.
Awesome. It's so funny you mentioned that video class, because that's that exact exercise that you thrived at is what you have to do for the ICF, so the International Coach Federation. It's what you have to do on any Masters of Coaching. It's actually an exercise that you would have done to train as a coach anyway. It's fascinating. Right. Yeah.
I never realized at 25 years old, like that's what was happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Amazing. So you decide, you know, you're in the clergy, you decide it's not you living your truth, but you are quite happy, but there's this life you want to, mm-hmm. you want to explore, and you decide to leave. What happens next?
Yeah. So, you know, and this is something that's really important that, I mean, there was a sense of, I'm so grateful, really with all my heart, to having been asked to get the position, you know, to work with the Cardinal, because what happened was all of like the normal priestly things that you think of preaching, going to the hospital, all those weddings, was now kind of taken away. And my life was very administrative and, you know, working in like, you know, organizing, you know, diplomatic events and master of ceremonies and being the bridge to all these meetings. And I enjoyed it. And I realized I wasn't missing the parish life as much. So that was a big kind of indicator. I'm like, this is different. But then I realized this is not the way I want to spend the rest of my life. And there was also an interior formation inside of realizing, wow, I want to really be true to who I am. I was a late bloomer, you know, and accepting that sense of my heart. And so what I did is I actually went to work with someone for about 9 months. I remember I said, I want to test this out. And it was a psychologist that I worked with. And I remember saying, I want someone who's not Catholic. I want someone who's like, someone who has no connection. He was this wonderful Jewish psychologist that was a gift, because I was able to really put out what I was feeling and why. And for anyone who's been through that process, whether it's through therapy or through coaching, you go in with one intention, but it's like an onion, right? It peels different layers. And so it really brought me to a conscious change of heart, that my decision wasn't just based on an emotion of like, oh, I don't want this life, or I feel trapped. I really was able to go inward to do that inner work. And it was wonderful too. I mean, you know, as I got that clarity, then I was able to say, okay, what's my time frame of when I would like to leave, and kind of putting together that plan. So that was really important, to really doing that inner work. And that's why I tell everybody that unless you go inward, unless you spend the time to look at what some of the root issues are in a clarity, then when you make your announcement that you're leaving a job or a relationship, no matter what comes at you, you will always be grounded. And that's what happened to me, because there was a lot that was thrown at me when I made the decision and made it announced that could have like, ooh, self-doubt, but I was peaceful and I was able to move forward with clarity and with joy.
So do you think, Brian, that's sort of aligning with your purpose? Is it like knowing exactly what it is you feel that you want to turn up as? Is it aligning with purpose? And would that have been easy to do outside of the church than it would have been in the church, because the church would have still had some structure? So you can give more of yourself.
I think so. I think, you know, when you're able to just be fully immersed into who you are. And I think, you know, it just kind of is like a ripple effect to those that you serve. I mean, I think that really has a huge impact. And I think, you know, it also, what I have found, that it was funny when I launched the company, I remember thinking, I really need to own my story. Like, I never hid when I went to New York City that I was a priest. I mean, obviously it was on my resume, right? And, you know, that's one of the reasons I got my first job, because they saw kind of the network and the things I had. But I never really talked about it a lot, because I wanted to prove that I could be a successful executive, that I had all these things. But when I launched the company, that's when I really had to embrace that sense of spirituality, not talking religion, But that sense of spirituality within me, the sense of using intuition, the sense of alignment, the sense of purpose, higher self. And that is what has enabled me to work, I think, at a very effective level with the clients and organizations I work with now at a very deep place that I think is an attraction and a sense of drawing inward.
So give us an idea then of the sort of people that you work with now then, Brian.
Yeah, so, you know, it's so funny, and I'm sure you can relate to this, and I'm sure so many who are listening can relate to this as well. They always talk about know your target audience, you know, and all this, you know, and there's truth to that. You know, you can't be a generalist. You need to know who you are. And I remember, you know, really trying to think through like, well, I mean, I'm an executive. I've been an executive. Do I want to work with those people? Do I want to work with, you know, I worked with a lot of physicians. Do I want to just work with doctors? So for me, I work with professional leaders. You know, that's where I'm at. And one of the specialties are new CEOs. And why I love working with new CEOs are because obviously they're at a moment that they've been planning for. Some of them have, you know, really been aspiring to that. Some of them have all of a sudden found themselves in that role. You know, maybe there was a company and, you know, someone left and they've been appointed. And I find at that moment, they're vulnerable. And I find at that moment, they are now at their leadership is at a different place. And that's where they need some of the greatest support, because they may have a vision of how they want the organization and company to go through. They may have inherited a lot of issues that all of a sudden now they are like, how do I deal with this? They're dealing with sometimes with boards, they're dealing with their own strengths, and they're also getting triggered. They're also getting triggered inwardly. And as I always say, the same dynamics that take place on a schoolyard take place in the boardroom. And, you know, that's what happens a lot of times. And so I love working with those leaders that want to do that inward work and to really be aligned so that they can be very successful, because there's a sense of high people pleasing when you're a new CEO and proving yourself. And how do you bring that down? How do you maintain the level of who you are and be rooted in the joy and also with the clarity of what you need to do?
That's amazing, that, Brian. And it's so good time. Well, it's so timely that you're guest 47, because on podcast number 46, we had Peter Pritchard, the group CEO of Pets at Home, on the podcast. And he talked actually quite at length about being an openly gay CEO. But actually, what he really summed up really nicely was that as a first time CEO and that as a new CEO, he was like, I think every CEO has a coming out moment. And he's like, that's about coming out as themselves, because you've been on this journey as a CEO to get to this place for so long that you maybe don't know who you are in that role, and you change in that role. And he talked about this notion of coming out to the you as a CEO, which I just thought was so eloquent how he put it. But I think what you've just explained then, there's just, I think a lot of us just think about these CEOs as these people that have just got it, they've just got it nailed, and that mm-hmm. they don't have feelings or emotions, and they're just the boss, right? But actually, let's carry on with this. What are some of the things that you come up against and coaching new CEOs with, these, what did you call it, like playground antics sometimes in the boardrooms? Exactly. What is it that you will be coaching on?
Yeah, there's a great question. I'll give an example. I'll give a couple, like, I'm all about concrete examples, right? So I lived in New York City, so I'm a straight shooter, and I believe you can't live in theory. You got to give examples. So like one of them was, I had one new CEO that shared with me, you know, he said, Brian, I have to do these town hall meetings for the employees, you know, different ones. And he said, my marketing team puts together like my key points, and I have to stand up there. And this individual has a great personality, like stellar background, but great personality. And, you know, he shared with me, he said, Brian, it's horrible. Like, I can't be the rah-rah person up there. He said, it's not coming across. I'm not connecting. I get distracted when I see people looking at their phone. What am I doing wrong? Why aren't they listening? I feel my energy row. He said, I take off my sports jacket and I'm soaked underneath. Like, I just, it's not there. So part of the issue is sometimes CEOs feel they need to fit a certain image or what's been done by their predecessors. So I worked with that individual to say, okay, your greatest strength is building collaboration and community through relationships. And so they developed a way to go walk the halls at very unique times to pop into offices, to speak to the cleaning woman in the hall, you know, late at night, you know, and they came back and say, how's your family? What's going on? And what that did is it built an incredible engagement. But when the COVID happened and so many things transitioned, that individual was listened to and supported at the highest level. So it's tapping into sometimes what are your strengths and leading with that. The other big issue too is I think one of the other areas is CEOs that have to report to a board for the first time, you know, whether that's in a for-profit or not-for-profit. That's a whole jungle of issues that go along there. And trying to manage expectations, sometimes boards get overly involved in the operations. So helping CEOs to be able to set boundaries, especially for those that is critical, because it's easy for them to, you know, do that with those that might report to them, but they also have to manage reporting up and setting those boundaries. And that's something I work a lot with, because that's where I find most CEOs get triggered quite a bit. The third area is sometimes a CEO feels, especially a new CEO, they got to know everything. They got to know everything. You know, they go in there. There was one CEO that she had been in the company for a number of years, I think just about a decade, but all of a sudden, she is leading these meetings with clients and it's in certain areas that were not her expertise. And I said, you don't need to be the expert. I said, your gift as the CEO is you frame the framework at the beginning, you set the tone, but bring in individuals from your team that do have that expertise that maybe can work with you a little beforehand, but can take the lead on certain aspects. And that helped them, you know what I mean? Because they sometimes add a lot of pressure. So, but again, it always goes back to the individual. Why are they being triggered to feel threatened? Why are they feeling fearful? What is that? And then coming to help them to have some solutions that are positive that they can move forward.
Yeah, I think that it is a particular challenge. And particularly a challenge for first-time CEOs that they feel as if they should fit into how the previous CEO ran it. And it's like you say, that you're never going to be able to have all the strengths of everybody else. So you've got to create your own framework for that. And I think when they understand that, and it's like that, quite a lot opens up for them then, Brian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It gives them a sense of being open to their own creativity. It's also a sense of empowering their team around them as well. You know, it really, really is. The other CEOs I work with are sometimes individuals who've been CEOs for a while, you know. And I remember this one CEO that hired me had been a CEO of a publicly traded billion-dollar company and said to me, what's the difference if I work with you, Brian, versus one of the bigger companies that has come recommended to me? And I said, it's pretty easy. It's pretty straightforward. Number one, I am not afraid to shine a light on what you really need to see and hear. I said, as a CEO, you're very used to being told what you need to hear. And sometimes you're not always told what you need to hear. And I said, I will not be afraid to do that in a very professional, compassionate way when you need to hear something. And I said, second, I take the approach, you have to be fully aligned. When you're fully aligned, who you are as a person and professionally, and with your gifts, your core values, that is where you'll have the greatest strength internally to create the world externally. And if you align with that vision and with that belief and that resonates, then I'm your person to work with, because that's where you'll have true transformation.
Yeah, so true. I'm really liking that you've used the T word a lot, you know, that the understanding your triggers. And I think this is something we work with a lot in the understanding your leadership shadow. So obviously the higher you get up in the organization, the more sway you have on the whole culture of the organization. And often when we're working with CEOs, the first thing we'll try and help them understand is their like metacognitive thinking patterns. So where are they going to fall short really when they're very stressed? So your metacognitive thinking and patterns, for people that not really heard of that before, are just the shortcuts your brain makes. Like, do you revert to black and white thinking, or do you tend to catastrophize, or do you tend to fortune tell? You have all these different kind of shortcuts really that your brain makes. But if you really understand those triggers, you understand potentially where the downfalls culturally of your organization will be. And often as CEOs have spent so long trying to get where they've got, they haven't understood this concept of the shadow, and that actually they could just do one thing, like tap somebody on the shoulder, and they remember that for like a year. It's so powerful. But these triggers are so important too, because how you get triggered personally affects everybody. And that is frightening, but it's also super empowering. Talk us through your experience of that and how you might approach that with a CEO that was getting triggered by something. Perhaps they have a tendency for black and white thinking, that yes, no approach, or catastrophizing. Talk us through how you might handle that with a client.
Yeah, sure. No, definitely. Well, first of all, I'll begin by also saying I begin every single one of my sessions with a breathing, grounding exercise with every one of my clients. And that is something that is just proven to be very powerful. So I find the clients that I'm working with are going from one thing to the next. And so by teaching them different breathing techniques that help reduce their anxiety, help them get centered, it has a huge impact. So right away, that changes the energy and the openness to the conversation, especially when we lead into what might be getting triggered. I find one of the biggest things I've created, I often will tell my clients, stop going Netflix on me. And what does that mean? It means that they are creating a series in their mind and they're playing it over and over again and casting what's going to happen and creating all these scenarios. And when we keep doing that in our minds over and over again, that just holds us back from taking positive action. It takes us from being creative. It helps us, it keeps us into controlling the fear of this is going to be, they're going to do this, and you anticipate. So I really help clients to kind of step back when they're going into that kind of whole aspect. Oh, I'm going to go back to the board chair there. I know they're going to say this. I know they're going to resist, and I have to plan this. Okay. So first of all, you're projecting that. So let's take it back. So I try and get underneath that a little bit of asking the questions of like, why are you projecting that? What are you fearful of on that aspect? And by kind of taking the Netflix series down and kind of taking away some of the characters, it really starts to create the space of really looking at where they are and why they're feeling that way. And it really is getting to that root moment and really helping them realize that. The biggest thing I work with CEOs who are in that place too, as I remind them over and over again, your presence is more powerful than all the words you can speak at a board meeting. The way you enter in and the energy you bring to every email, to the way you walk down the hall, the way you appear on a Zoom, the way you deliver something is so powerful. And that is what is going to transcend in so many ways. It doesn't mean you don't have to be prepared and you don't have to do all the other things, but your presence is what will set the tone and how you move forward in that. And that is something I always try and bring in as I work with them as well.
Oh my God, there's so much good stuff in that, isn't there, John? I mean, that going Netflix, oh no, I love that.
Yeah,
because I like that. What we see is, you know how Netflix just auto-plays?
Totally.
You do see leaders do this all the time, and they don't even stop to pause and think about where they really are. It's like, it's just things are happening to them, not that you are playing a role in this as well, and you have some power. So I might even use that.
Go for it. And it just came out one day in a session. This was like a year ago.
I
said, stop going Netflix on me. And it's one of those things that's so true. We create these stories. It's too much.
And
it's
self-talk,
isn't it? That bit's the self-talk, the Netflix thing. The other thing that you were saying is about how you show up. That's your public image and how other people see you. And if they don't get you, they sort of make it up and make it up for themselves.
Yeah. I think the other thing is too, when you're in a position of leadership, you have to realize that people will create their own perception of you as well. Like, you just have to realize, you know, there's a lot of times it can be a judgment. There can be things people will create a perception. And you have to own that and release it and absolutely release it and really get into knowing who you are, because that goes back to the alignment. If you're grounded and aligning with who you are, you will always be able to be present and to be open to listening and to be able to be moving forward. But if you're always worried about, oh, what's the board going to think, or my senior directors or the new clients and different things, that energy is always going to come through, and you're always going to be a little itchy, you know, in there. So you have to be fully rooted in where you are. Not easy. It's always going to have its ebbs and flows. I'm not saying it just goes away, but that habit can change you as a leader. And the leaders that have that are the ones that make tremendous impact, and change cultures.
How would you go about coaching somebody on that then? I think you have this line like around becoming an evolved leader and actually really getting into owning your truth. And I think I want to bring it back to something you said before, that I think a lot of us don't often think of, that a lot of CEOs do tend to be people pleasers, and therefore you're always in this battle of, if you don't come back to who you are, you end up pleasing nobody, and especially not yourself. Mm-hmm. So how would you go about working on that for somebody that hasn't done that work internally yet, and that is the most important thing to do as a first-time CEO?
Sure. So one of the first things I do is I really spend time with them about going from a mindset of, this is my work or my title, to, this is my mission. Because when you have a different aspect of, you know, wow, this is a mission that I've been given here to align not only who I am, my gifts, my values, but I can have an impact on the people around me, that I can create a culture that is very different than a culture maybe that they've worked in, but something they really see can be powerful of respecting their employees and growing. But also, if it's, you know, to make a lot of money and they want a high revenue, you're going to get a higher revenue and you're going to produce more when you're more grounded in that way. So right away, I spend the time is, what is your mission? How do you want to be present? What kind of energy do you want to bring? How do you want to elevate your gifts that you know are beautiful and powerful and can have impact and strategically align with the organization? That is critical, because that aligns to your inner purpose as well. When you have that sense of, okay, I'm leading a hedge fund company and we're here to make gazillions of dollars and to help and do this investments, that's wonderful. That's noble. That's great. But at the same time, how do you want to transform and create the presence and the energy around there? That is where I spend my time. Number two, I always ask them one very simple question from the first session. What do you desire? And when you ask yourself, what do you desire? that's where the truth is. Doesn't mean you always have to know what to do, but to be open, what do you desire? And that is something I ask even new CEOs, what do you desire with this position that you've been given to really make the impact? Yes, you know what the company or organization is asking you to do, whether it's revenue and profit growth or whatever it might be, but how do you desire to live that out in a very powerful way? And that changes it, and that opens up more inwardly of how they want to tap into their natural gifts and to really line that up.
Do you find that that question takes people some time to think the answer through?
Yeah, definitely. And that's why, you know, you work with them over a period of time, right? You know, that it helps to kind of get that through, saying, you know, what do you desire? I'm like, you don't need to know right now, but we're going to keep coming back to that, because it sometimes they do know right away, but sometimes they're not 100% clear. But when they do have that clarity and they start to realize, oh, I do desire to, you know, impact as a CEO, the next generation, I want to do more mentoring. You know, there's such a joy that comes into that. That's what one CEO, you know, it's just, I kept bringing that up. I said, you keep talking about teams, you've developed it. What's the desire there? And that led to them really creating an incredible internal network to help mentor. So yeah, it's an important question, and it's one that they need to reflect on.
I think that's so true, because quite often, I think being a CEO can feel like you're in service of others, like a lot of the time. Yeah, there's maybe not an ego thing going on there and something like an achievement for yourself, but there's a lot of being in service of others. And I'm just thinking about a leader we've been working with quite recently, and the joy is gone, you know, and I think sometimes it's really difficult to be as present as you want to be when the joy of doing the job that you really wanted to do is gone. But it's in your power as a CEO to bring some joy back, but you have to be reminded of that. Right. And that's a really nice way of doing it, because when you're happy, you're going to be happier at leading others, right?
Yeah, definitely. And it doesn't mean there's not going to be challenges as a CEO. You know what I mean? Who knows? Like, maybe they have to do a reorganization, and, you know, what does that mean? Those are not easy decisions. That is extremely painful when you're knowing that the decision that's on your shoulder is going to impact lives. However, think about the mission of, like, what do you desire? How do you desire to deliver that news? You know, you don't have to, being an evolved leader doesn't mean, okay, now HR comes in, you sit there, you look at the person and say, hi, Amy, as of today, I'm so sorry, your job is eliminated, and you get up and walk out and leave HR there. So there's a new way of, how do you want to be, how do you desire to treat your employees? I think that's one thing the pandemic has showed us. You know, you used to always hear, oh, our employees are everything, we value, da, da, da. Well, guess what? When dollar signs came to the surface and they had to close things down, companies didn't have an issue just laying off people left, right, and center. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a way to treat humanity. There's a way to treat people, always highly professional, always with, you know, what needs to be done with the law, et cetera. But you can do it in an evolved way and really take it to the next level. And that's where leaders now who are evolved, who have that sense inwardly and their desire to lead, that can make the greatest impact.
I'm seeing a lot of similarities with what you're saying, or a lot of parallels between your approach and what we have historically associated as good leadership in the church. Like, you know, that you're talking about flying quite spiritually, and almost like the breathing being like the ritual sense of taking mass, and definitely the listening and the what do you believe coming in. I can really see how you are a really nice, like, comforting presence. But talk us through how you balance that with being challenging as well, and, you know, having those difficult conversations.
Yeah, so thank you for that. I would say, so first of all, I've never had an issue being direct. Like, that's never been an issue for me. And I think, you know, real truth, real compassion, sincere, honest, open listening is also being a light of truth back to the person. And sometimes saying in a very clear, kind way what needs to be spoken. And that is just something that's how we grow. You know, we often remember in our life sometimes saying, ooh, when someone said that to me, it wasn't easy to hear, but wow, that really helped me at that moment. I remember I had a boss and she said to me, it was this huge portfolio I was taking on and I had a meeting with her. And, you know, I mean, it was just a lot. Like it was just a lot of expectations. And I wasn't backpedaling, but I was like, wow, this might take a little more time on this, but we're going to do this. And she looked at me and she said, she was kind of like the Iron Lady that we used to call her that. You know, I know you'll appreciate that being British. And she looked at me, she said, Brian, I'm just going to give you a little piece of advice. And I stopped. She said, just own it. And she said, just own it. And she said, if you own it, then you're going to be able to move it forward. And I'm going to tell you something. It kind of stung at the moment because my ego was like, well, of course I'm owning it. Like, you know, I know this. I have this job. Like, I'm doing all this. But it really put me in place, like, I'm not owning it. I was looking for a little excuse or something like that, you know, or kind of a little way. But, you know, being truthful and being direct is how we grow. And I think that's very, very important. But it's always done in a sense of kindness. It's always done in a sense of respect. And it's really, really important. And so that's what I'm here for. People don't hire me to just be told, oh, you're doing okay. It's hard. It's really hard. Being a CEO is tough. No, I'm not your person. But if you want someone that will listen and walk with you to shine that light, to help see where the areas are, and also say, wow, this is something I think we need to look at. This is what you're saying. That's how you grow. And that's what I'm here to do. And I think one of the biggest things is, you know, when people hire me, I don't want you as a client forever. You know what I mean? I'm here to help you get to a certain point and then let you go. And that's the healthy approach. And you can only do that when you're open and direct and clear. And that's just who I am. And I think anyone who's ever worked with me will attest to that, that's the best way you have to be. And truth is about being honest.
Yeah, I think you really do need to be honest with people. I guess it's being able to pick up on how best they will receive it.
Absolutely.
And I think that first bit around people's purpose and how they show up gives you those sort of little gaps that you can go for and do it in a way that is still kind and compassionate. For some people, yeah, you know, it can be real tough love. And I think that works well for them, but it doesn't work for everybody. So I think that's the coach's challenge, really, is meeting people as you find them in a way that they will respond to that kind of those interventions.
I'm seeing a lot of similarities, John. I don't know if you are, but with Graham Keane, who we had two episodes ago, and he talked a lot at length in leadership that actually it is difficult to be kind in leadership because it requires a lot of courage, because to be kind is also to be very honest and to be transparent, to have those hard conversations. And then we kind of had Peter Pritchard, who talked about putting that into practice. So his whole stance was to put the people first, the pets at home throughout the pandemic. And that did mean making some very difficult, you know, decisions, and they have a very command and control approach on some things when it comes to animal welfare, but they also give a lot of trust and a lot of kindness around other things that go wrong when perhaps people's intentions were good but that behavior wasn't. And then what you're talking about is really, if you show up with a lot of kindness and the intent's there, that is the evolved leader. And I think what we're really seeing over this last 2 or 3 years is the real place of kindness in really strong leadership. And that's very new.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, kindness is not weakness.
No.
And I think that's how many people see it. Oh, if you're being kind, oh, you're being weak. No, if you're being kind, you're actually being truthful. You're being honest. You're setting boundaries. You know, your yes means yes. Your no means no. You're clear about that. You're listening. Kindness is respect. And that's so important. Like, that's just so important. You know, humanity is designed, you know, to integrate with each other and to be collaborative. And I often will say kindness goes a long, long way in my book. It really does. And I used to always tell the team who, you know, worked with me, I used to say, listen, if you make a mistake or something happens, just tell me about it. You know what I mean? Don't blame someone else or make excuses. I will be the first person to work with you to help correct it. Things are going to happen. And, you know, and to take ownership of that is would take ownership if I did something. That's kindness. You know what I mean? However, if that's not done, it's also kind and a good thing to be able to, you know, have accountability saying, wow, like, why did this happen? I'm confused. Help me understand this. You know, we need to move forward. That changes the whole dynamic. And it really, really does. It's very important. It really is.
Talk us through that kindness and how you see it shown up. And obviously on this podcast, we have some incredible leaders with incredible stories, because obviously the good people want to talk to us on building better leaders. But there are a lot of politics in the boardroom. There are a lot of places where it doesn't sometimes feel very kind to work. What's your view on how that does end up playing out and why that's still an issue when most of us know what to do?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, from my experience, I'm just thinking of a couple board experiences of companies I worked with that, you know, there was one that there was just this very dysfunctional chair, just to put it what it is. It was a very dysfunctional chair that was, I think, had high ego. I think sometimes I've always had told CEOs this and others, I said, sometimes on boards, and I've served on boards myself, you will have individuals that maybe occasionally, and they're not common, haven't been as successful in their career, or they have some baggage that maybe they're not comfortable in their role. And they kind of bring that into the boardroom to kind of show their worth a little bit. And, you know, all it takes is one person to just derail the energy of a board meeting and things of that nature. And I think, you know, it's hard when you're a CEO. I'm thinking in one particular case that had a huge impact on the CEO. You're trying to be there, you're trying to go back and forth. And I remember saying to the CEO, he said, this is dysfunctional. This is dysfunctional, and you are allowing the dysfunction.
What would you do in that case? Because I think we've all been in these situations where if you're if you're up and you're happy and you're trying to bring somebody that's down up, it's very hard unless they want to feel it and get into it and they want to do the work. But if somebody's down and they want to bring you down, they will always succeed. Like, it's so much harder to fight that negative energy than it is, you know, if somebody really wants to be dysfunctional and to ruin a board meeting. What would be your advice in those cases?
So a couple of things. I think first of all is just to recognize the situation for what it is. Second, I think that's why when a CEO has someone, like whether it's a coach or someone else that they can speak to, that can be objective, can be neutral, and focus on how it's impacting them and to help them make some new clear decisions is very important. And I also think it's also important in that time too to say, okay, how are some positive steps you want to start manage this moving forward? Sometimes you need allies. You know what I mean? Who are some other people around the board that you can engage with that, you know, can also be aligned with you in this opportunity? Because again, they don't have to be the great hero, you know, at that moment, but bringing others around them to help them do that. I think that's very important in helping the leader say and realize, okay, this negativity doesn't have to control you. You can make the decision of how you want to see the situation and start to address the situation. And politics do tie into it. I fully realize that. And it's complex, right? Because there can be money tied to it. There can be sponsorships tied to it. There's a lot. I totally am not like saying, oh, that's what you do. No, there's a lot there. But sometimes getting in line with some other people that may feel the same way can be very, very positive. And when it gets to a point, I had one CEO that had got to a point that the board, the chair, and a few others were so dysfunctional that she had to take it up a notch. She had to take it up to another committee to really address what had to be done. And that did lead to a couple members resigning. And the rest of the board was supportive. So sometimes that's how we grow too, even doing that. That's hard situations, but that can really lead to the culture. That's being an evolved leader rather than just suppressing it down. And then if you don't address it, trust me, it's going to explode in some way, whether a passive aggressive approach or it's going to be a bad meeting. So it has to be addressed.
Yeah, I think you've just very clearly defined that other side of being kind in that example that you've just used. Mm-hmm. And we started off, didn't we, by asking you about standing in your truth and being able to embrace what's in your heart. And that comes very strongly through, Brian, that's sort of the it is that coaching ethos that you bring to your clients. So in each podcast, we always ask our guests if they would give us three leadership essentials. Would you be good enough to fire some off for us, the things that you really, really are keen on in terms of a leadership strength?
Mm-hmm. Number one, every leader has to do inner work. It's that simple. You, as a leader, you have to make sure that you spend the time, whatever that is for that person, whether it's doing the yoga, whether it's meditation, whether it's working through, you know, counseling, having a coach, that inner work is what's going to help you to have the clarity to create the outer world that you desire to have, number one. And create that every day. Every day that has to be done. You can't just say, I do it on Saturdays or something like that. Every day, that has to be part of it. If you don't do it, you won't succeed and you'll always feel you're searching for something more. Number two, all about relationships. I just can't say more than enough. I think leaders that cultivate relationships that help them feel joyful, aligned, inspired, challenged around them will help them to succeed at a very different level. And that can be relationships within an organization that they work with, the people they establish they want to have around them. It can be organizations they belong with, whatever it may be, but relationships that really are connected to their core value, to their heart, what they desire will set them apart. And the third aspect I would certainly say is, it sounds so simple, but follow the joy. Follow the joy. When the joy is missing, it's more a reflection on yourself than what's happening around you. Follow the joy of what it is that you want to create and where things are at. Even in the most challenging of moments, whether personally or professionally in an organization, it goes back to, how do I want to bring light? How do I want to bring up my presence? How is this, even though it's a difficult situation, knowing that I can bring light. Light is also joy. That is so important. And when that's missing, that's when you need to say, whoa, I need to step back. Those three things are a constellation that will always point you in the direction you need to be.
They're great leadership traits. I don't think we've had those before, have we, Rachel?
You know what? Every single one of those
is
a brand new one. Thank you for that, Brian. And just, you know, in terms of, you are a very positive person. You're a real ray of light, actually, to just even be talking to on Zoom. What are the things that you do and the rituals that you engage with on a daily basis to remind yourself of this? Because it's not stuff that comes... The bad stuff can sometimes be easier to believe. So how do you stay in that place where you can remind yourself of these daily?
So I think one of the first things I'll do, I'll share this. I don't think I've shared this on any podcast I've done, but you know, so you get the inside scoop here. So one of the things I do, so I have a meditation practice and I have talked about that. And I'm very, you know, that's a big part of my beginning every day of whether it's breathing and stretching and meditating and journaling and writing, all the things that everyone talks about, but it's true and it works, it's powerful. But one of the things I do is one of my own personal kind of prayers and centering very early in the morning is I always say, I'm grateful for the billions and billions of years that have come before me. I acknowledge and am grateful for all the billions and years that will come after me. But all I know is I'm in this moment of exactly where I need to be in this moment. And what I do at that time, I actually place my hands usually on my heart and I just visualize I'm in Toronto, Canada, wherever I am in the world that day on Earth. And I just project out to the solar system. I project out to the universe and beyond. Literally, we are a teeny tiny speck in something that is much, much bigger. So keep that in reality. And that is what keeps you there. And that just grounds me deeply. I know I'm here for a reason in that moment. There's more and things beyond what I can, even my simple little mind can fathom. That keeps you centered. And that keeps you very focused.
That's brilliant. It's the Carl Sagan little blue dot, isn't it?
Yeah, very similar. And it's very spiritual too. And it's that sense if we talk about, oh, the universe has your back and, you know, abundance and flowing. Okay, that's all great. But guess what? You got to live it and you got to visualize it. You have to visualize that you are here in this small moment and where we are and all the things that we get so focused on. Yeah, they have their place. And that is our universe right now. We have to make sure we're aware of that. But keep it in the greater perspective of where things are at. And that keeps you out of yourself, keeps you focused on others, and also makes you realize you're really small and you only have a small amount of time. So make sure you're purposeful and intent and joyful how you're going to do it.
Yeah, that is such a great practice because what goes on in some people's heads or even our own heads when we're anxious or... It can feel bigger than the universe, can't it? And
absolutely. You absolutely
have to. I am on the meditation journey. I've meditated for quite a while, but it's the doing it daily that I forget. I tend to do it every about 2 or 3 days, and it tends to be when I need it. But it's bringing myself back to doing that daily. Any other little rituals you've got on a daily basis that you do?
Yeah, totally. I think the other thing is that's really important to me. So I always do this. So I'll do two things. So I always begin my week. So even before we recorded this, today is a Monday. So we're recording this day for anyone who's listening. One of the things I do to start my week is I pick around 11 individuals every Monday morning and I send them a message that I just will either people through LinkedIn, people that have come through my mind, people I've just been inspired, and I leave them a voice note just to say, you went through my mind. I wish you a wonderful week. Keep inspiring, whatever it might be. And you'll be amazed if you really open. I actually just close my eyes. And there are some people come to my mind. I jot their names down. And then other times I go through my list of LinkedIn. Who is it? And all of a sudden a name will come across. And I send them a note. There's no greater way to begin your week than to impact someone else's life first. That is a beautiful way to begin. And you'll notice that people respond back. This meant so much to me. This is what was happening, especially if you just open yourself up. So if you're getting stuck in yourself, which That happens to me. Trust me. my little universal moment implodes in 2 seconds sometimes. And I'm so consumed about what I have to do or this or that, that get out of yourself and just reach out to people. Say, you know what? I really appreciate your posts. I just want to say, I know how much work goes into that. I love something you said on this date. It means a lot. Wow. You just transformed everything. That's a huge thing. And the other thing is make sure you take time to move your body. I think that's one of the biggest things. So, you know, I'm an avid runner, bicyclist, going to the gym, you know, because that really helps you go. When your energy is stagnant and you're just in front of a Zoom or you're trying to work, it just holds you back. So make sure to move a few times during the day and definitely have that routine. That is powerful. And I think executives that do that on a regular basis have better. It's really important, especially as we're kind of in this weird moment of back to office, back still at home. That is so, so crude. That's something I do every day.
I think especially with the like transition into this like hybrid of like half and half, the routines of exercise are the things that you don't often know they've gone until you're feeling it mentally and physically. And yes. They're things you need to protect the most.
Yes.
Hard, yeah. Worth it. Yeah. Any other words of wisdom you'd like to share before? Any little stories or antidotes? The floor is yours before we wrap this up.
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I just want to say thanks so much for the opportunity. I think it's great, the platform you created to inspire others, to, you know, help other leaders share their wisdom, their insight to inspire. That's a powerful ripple that can have so much influence in the world. So I just want to thank you for inviting me to be part of that. And I wish you all the best as you continue to inspire so many others. All the best to you. And thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Really appreciate that. That's what we set out to do. So thank you for that.
It is really nice, isn't it? How we're like Simon Town had obviously, I think you coached him, and then he just said wonderful things about you. And the people that we're meeting on this journey, it's so inspiring, and it really is lovely to bring the world of coaching a little bit closer. So thank you for your time on this Monday morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I wish you a great week, and to all your listeners as well.
And if people would like to get in touch or follow you, Brian, where can they find you?
First of all, the biggest place I spend most of my time social media is on LinkedIn. So connect with me on LinkedIn. Send me a note saying that you heard this conversation here, and you will hear back from me. Follow me. Also, you can connect with me through my website, which is just evolutionevolution.com. The website's going through an evolution of change. It doesn't represent everything right now. It's in the midst of a change. So I'm sure for many who have their own company can relate to that, but you can certainly send me a message there. So welcome to hear from you. And if you're looking to evolve a little bit more, happy to be part of that journey with you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast. We hope you've got a lot out of this. If you'd like to read up a bit more on any of the content that you've heard in today's podcast, be sure to check out our website, scaffoldcoaching.com.